need to wear the headphones? No.
You don't need the earphones. It's just for me to hear. Good afternoon, and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT 91.9 FM Community Radio from Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless area. And Who's in the Kitchen is a show that is about food, and today we have a special guest who has a new shop in Viroqua, and it's called Hawthorne. And I went in there curiously and was just so impressed. And I thought, well, this will be fun because it's a home design shop. It's kind of well, anyway, we'll talk about it. But anyway, it's where the old Bon Ton used to be, right there on Main Street. And so I want to welcome Allison Morgan to our show today. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Philippia.
So glad you could be here today. And I'm thinking, how long has that shop been open? Just 2 or 3 months?
I opened at the end of September in 2025, so about 4 months.
Yeah, it is pretty new, but I hadn't gone in there, and somebody said, do go in. So that was kind of fun to see what was inside, and I think I was very impressed for Viroqua having such a, I would say, a posh sort of studio type of shop, and a very lovely, elegant person behind the counter who has put this together. So I thought it would be fun to find out about her shop, how she came up with the idea of it. And while I was shopping in there, I found out that she had written a book and on home design, and it's called Ritual, or what is it called?
Our Kindred Home.
Oh, Our Kindred Home. But it is about food ritual, right?
Yeah, it's about... So the tagline is herbal recipes, plant wisdom, and seasonal rituals for rekindling connection with the earth.
Oh, my goodness. That's so lovely.
Yeah.
So I'm just really interested in both the shop and the book and how you get a business started and, you know, what's involved. So, Allison, did you grow up around here?
No, I didn't.
Where did you grow up?
I'm a California native.
No
so
kidding.
I grew up in the Bay Area and moved to the Sacramento region when I was in high school and went to UC Davis.
Okay. In what field?
I studied international relations. So,
okay.
Yeah, something completely different from what the book, you know, is about. But I studied, basically, it was an interdisciplinary degree looking at global capitalism and the way it affects people on the planet. So it was, we had economic classes, history, sociology, poli-sci, anthropology, all different lenses looking at global capitalism.
How interesting. What a background. Well, did you meet your husband out there then?
Yeah, so we met at UC Davis. He was a grad student and I was undergrad, and so we met, and we were both, then I got into a PhD program in geography. I was working at a nonprofit that did research on climate change and water resource use, and we kind of both were really burnt out in academia and decided to move to the Midwest, where my husband grew up.
Yes, and so your husband is Aaron Park, and many of us here.
No,
he's Aaron
best
Park
friends.
Is your best friend of your husband.
Yeah,
excuse me. Right.
Yeah, so they went to college together, and so he came to the Driftless region, you know, for breaks with Aaron, and kind of fell in love with this place.
Well, and did your so Aaron still lives in the east side of the state, right?
He lives in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
Right. And Aaron's mom was the founder of Paper, Scissors, Stone, mm-hmm. which is a business I bought, and it grew out of the Waldorf tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you ever met Annette?
Yes.
And did you get some inspiration from her?
I did. I mean, she was a wonderful woman, and we, you know, my first trip out to the Driftless, we stayed with the Parks and went to Snowy Ridge to the Christmas tree farm and cut down a tree and kind of partook in their holiday rituals, which were very like magical for me, a California girl who'd never really had snow for Christmas, but Yeah, I think, you know, just her, like, her livelihood and her authenticity was something really inspiring.
Yeah, so how did you get the idea of getting into, well, cooking and ritual? So let's go either direction.
Yeah, sure. My maiden name is Cook, so I feel like I kind of always had that idea that it was in my blood in some way, in at least in my lineage, to be in the kitchen. And I remember, I don't know, I was maybe 10 or 11 after school, you know, came home to my grandmother's house with a friend, and we were hungry, so we made a spaghetti bolognese.
I don't even know what that is.
I would like, you know, look at our cookbooks. My mom had a Joy of Cooking cookbook, and I would just experiment. I would watch her in the kitchen, and I would try it myself. You know, some things turned out delicious and some things didn't. I remember, you know, it was one summer break and it was her birthday, June 22nd, and I had realized I didn't get her a present for her birthday. So I pulled out the Joy of Cooking. We had, you know, a bowl of apples sitting on the counter, and I made her an apple pie. I think I must have been, like 12. So I've always really just kind of just jumped into...
You weren't intimidated.
Cooking. No, I wasn't. I mean, especially when you have a recipe, it just feels like the instructions are right there. And as long as you have the tools and the curiosity, that you can really, you know, make something out of nothing.
And usually a pie, you do have the ingredients around for crust. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll have to ask my mom how that pie, if she remembers that pie or if it turned out, you know, tasty. But, I've always just kind of been inspired that food can be a way to share with another person. It's nourishing, and it's also a way to show that you care, making a meal.
Right. Tuning into other people and what they would love, and serving something that you love and want to make for them. But that's a lot of cooking. And I guess to connect the cooking to ritual, and did you kind of get into a seasonal idea of cooking around the year?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that really came to me living here in the Midwest, right? In California, we didn't have seasons in the same way. And so I really did come to the ritual aspect, kind of living with the seasons, being here in the Midwest and frequenting farmers markets and really connecting to what is growing at what time of the year, and how to use what is seasonal in your cooking, and how that kind of, you know, marks time and space throughout the year, you know, when the apple, you know, go to the apple orchard. And so then that's when you make your apple pie, right? When they're the freshest and when they've just been picked, or, you know, growing things in your garden, connecting, I don't know, I just found that it connected me with the cycles of the of the earth, and it helped me ground in a different way. And so,
well, did you have a garden growing up? I mean, seems like California, everybody could grow something there.
Yeah,
but I don't know if your family.
Actually grew up in apartments, and so I did not have really the space to grow a big garden, but I did always have in the summertime like pots on our balcony. And so I would grow tomatoes and basil. And I remember my dad would be like, "You have a new tomato baby coming up." You know, I was so like proud to grow what I could in the space that we had. And so it was really always a dream of mine to have a garden. Like a full garden, you know, soil and, you know, growing different plants. And so, so I did container gardening when I was in high school. And then when I moved to college, that's when I had kind of my first garden bed in our rental. So, yeah, year-round growing, like, kale and herbs and things like that. And California's, you know, climate was really my first foray into gardening.
Mm-hmm. My brother and sister-in-law ended up out in near San Francisco, and they always loved to garden. But they said their soil just looked like broken-up flower pot.
Mm-hmm.
But she said when you watered it, it was very rich, and it was like, it was very different from Wisconsin soil, I'll tell you.
Yeah, for sure.
It didn't look like anything would grow there, and but just so amazing that it really does. It's very, sort of, this is why, you know, farming has become such a big thing in California, and I'm sure it's really quite different going south. It's a very long state.
It is.
So the northern climate would be really different from where my brother lives now, which is really Southern California and the desert, you know.
Right.
And but I think it's just amazing that you just kind of get going gardening. And I think I love to see people start out with a pot or something, because I think anybody really could grow a tomato plant, maybe a cucumber plant. And in Europe, you often see people in apartments and things just on the balcony. They just have a few things. And herbs are so wonderful to be able to run out and pick fresh.
It's so amazing. Yeah, I remember being in Italy a couple years ago, and we were in, like, the Lake Como region. And there were just these, like, baskets, you know, of little, you know, sun gold tomatoes just draped over this little tiny balcony window, right? And you're just like, you can grow. Plants grow in the most amazing, you know, places. So it's very empowering, I think, to connect with your food and where it comes from. And that was really kind of the curiosity for me, coming out, like being in college, and I'm learning about these systems, right? Like, where our food is coming from and what's in our food. And it was just these really, like, large scale, you know, how we get our food, where it comes from, who grows our food. I had all these, like, this information that I was learning, and to just kind of plant something myself and to see how I could grow something really kind of was my first, way to divest from that system and to kind of see really what energy and what, you know, power it is to be able to do that for yourself or to do that within your community, or to, you know, got curious about the farmers markets to see where, you know, the people who are actually growing your food. And so it was really this, like, connective piece for me.
Mm-hmm. So where did you move to in Wisconsin?
So we, when we left California, we moved to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Were you in an apartment there?
We
have a house.
Yeah, we bought our first house there. Mm-hmm. And so, had Aaron, actually, and AJ put in our first garden at our first little house that we bought where our daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so that that year we had, like, our first really, like, large-scale garden. We grew carrots and beets and kale. And made my daughter's, like, favorite kale risotto. She was one, you know, like, just she would pick carrots straight out of the ground and just eat, you know, chomp on them. And so, it was really an exciting time to just, like, be starting new things and trying, you know, just kind of thinking about the foundations of how you want to live and how you want to raise your kids and starting that, you know, so early on.
Isn't that wonderful to watch your children just see that food can come right from the ground?
Mm-hmm.
It's so miraculous.
It is. I think, and even for us too, right? Like, we kind of get separated from that understanding, right? That, like, all of, you know, everything we consume basically comes from plants, and it comes from the ground, or, you know, comes from animals that eat plants, or, and so, yeah, I think it's just, mm-hmm. it's a way that we can remember how we're nourished and sustained and, you mm-hmm. know, on Earth, too.
How many children do you have now?
We have two kids.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long have you been in the Viroqua area?
So we moved to Viroqua, I think, in 2017.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I didn't realize you've been here that long.
Yeah,
you have been here.
We've been here for a while. Yeah, we bought a little house in town, and that was kind of my, I always kind of talk about it as like the rabbit hole for me around plants. We bought a house in town, and the woman who had owned the house before us was an herbalist. And so she had, I think she originally had bought her home from her her grandparents. And had lived there maybe 4 to 5 years, but turned the whole yard into this kind of permaculture garden. And she grew her, like, all of her food there. I think she even brought some of the food that she grew to the farmer's market. And she grew her herbs. She had some, like, native pollinator gardens. And so that was really, like, my dream come true, right? Like, but the house was kind of small compared to what we'd been living in, but the garden was, like, everything I'd ever wanted. And so, we purchased that house, and then she kind of walked me through the garden. I remember taking, like, a little video recording of her telling me kind of, like, what was where, because it was just a whole bunch of, like, new friends, new plant friends I had never known before, you know, like, growing up in California. Rosemary and lavender were kind of always plants that I was really drawn to. But here it was a lot of different, you know, the perennials that come up. And so it really kind of was this portal for me to learn about plants and herbs. And, you know, she had things that she was using for her apothecary and for her her clients. And so I just kind of, you know, was like gift. Like, we purchased this house, but it felt like a gift. This garden felt like a gift. And so I really wanted to figure out how to be a steward of that that place.
That's wonderful. Plants. And I'm sure that person was very happy to pass her garden on to somebody that really cared. You know, well, that'd be a hard thing to part with.
Yes,
after all
it
that
is.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am talking with Allison Morgan, and you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT Community Radio, coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless area, 91.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can listen to podcasts on our archives. And you can listen live. We are always on Saturday mornings at noon to 1. But if you like to show, want to tell your friends about something you heard, you can go back to our archives at Who's in the Kitchen. And Allison has opened a little store here in Viroqua, a very tiny store. It's it's where Bon Ton used to be, and right there on Main Street near the theater. And it's just a little narrow shop, but very, very appealing. I went in there, and I just fell in love with it. It's quite beautiful. It's, I would say it's, oh, what is that word? It's spare. It's very tastefully decorated. It's not, like, jam-packed with stuff. And beautiful things. Just, it's just beautiful. It's a very pleasant place to go in. And then I thought, well, how in the world did this store get started in Viroqua? What made you even get to this point, Allison?
Well, I mean, like, life is a very, like, winding journey. One of my good friends, when the Bon Ton space opened up, she was like, I think you've been talking about having a store for, like, 7 years. And I was like, seven? That's a pretty, like, specific number. She's like, yeah, I think you would like a store. And I was like, would I? Well, okay. So I talked to Jess and threw my name into the hat of potential renters, and rented the space from Jess, who is the old owner of Bon Ton. And that kind of got me thinking about what I would want in a store. And so I basically grew up in a Crate and Barrel. I don't know if you're familiar with Crate and Barrel, but my mom worked there when I was born. And I was born, like, 6 to 8 weeks early or something like that. And so, like, I was at my baby shower at a Crate and Barrel. So there's, like, this picture of me in my, you know, car seat carrier next to a barrel. And so I was running in and out of stock rooms. You know, my mom would come home and bring catalogs, and they used to have this thing called shtickles. So things were like, if it had a mark on it, like a piece of furniture, employees would get it at a discount. So, you know, our home was always kind of a space that felt really cozy. And so, yeah, and then when I was in college, I worked there for a couple of years.
Oh, and so, okay.
Yeah, okay. I have always, like I said, I love cooking. So I love tools, right? I love utensils. And so when I was in college, I kind of collected things as I worked in the store. And I still have those things, right? Like, I still have a garlic press that I got 20 years ago, and cutting boards and things like that. And so I was really learning that, like, kind of concurrently with what I was studying in school, was that when things are made to be timeless and things are made out of really quality materials, and when there's things made with, like, craftsmanship, that they can last for a really long time. And so I really felt like that was kind of, you know, just like the kind of the opposite of what we are experiencing in a lot of consumer culture, where things are made of plastic, things are made with for planned obsolescence, right? Things are made to break so that you have to buy new ones often. But like, I have tools that I've carried with me for 20 years. And so when thinking about this store, like, I didn't want it to be, I don't know, zero waste or like specifically plastic free, but I really wanted to think about the tools that and the things that we use in our home and how those things can be created to last. And that's how heirlooms are made, right? When you think about antiques that you're buying, those are things that were made to last, that get passed on. To other, you know, to other people, to your children, can stay within families. So I really wanted to bring that kind of essence to the shop. Things made with care that hopefully are made to last.
Well, that, now I understand. That's what that shop was about. And when I went in, I just felt like everything in here is really quality. And I ended up buying some measuring spoons. And the measuring spoons I've had for years are just all dented and everything. They're really just pressed tin, mm-hmm. you know, and they hang on a little hook. And I thought, well, I've never really had really nice measuring spoons. And they had, you know, 1/8 and different, you know, there were a few more extra sizes that I'd never had. And I thought, these are going to last my lifetime for sure. And worthy of passing on. Mm-hmm. And so you have things there that are useful. I love the idea of just not going into a store and seeing things that you know, who would ever use them, or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you get that feeling in your store of that lasting quality and, useful. And I can see, you know, Crate and Barrel, that is a kind of a feeling of aesthetic. That it's not fussy or you know, overdone. It's like, it's simple. I'm still trying to find the word that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, well, you know, kind of like just watching that store evolve from when I was a child. It really was, you know, the owner of Crate and Barrel and the founder Gordon. He would come in to talk to the employees, right? And it was just like he wanted people to come into the shop to pick up the items, to feel them, and to, you know, want to take them home and feel like they could make those things a part of their life. And I kind of want that element in my shop too, that just like, you know, kind of everything we have in our homes, to me at least, carries an energetics, right? So if you think about like the person who's crafting the item, like the materials that it's made out of, you know, natural fibers, natural materials, they have a resonance. And so to really feel like connected to the items that make up your life, not just like things that you have, but really beautiful and functional pieces that, you know, that you use day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very impressed. The one thing that concerns me is that just such a small space. You're probably, you're starting small, but I'm just wondering, are you going to get more and more inventory?
Well, that's, I mean, it's like, I've never owned a business like this before, so it is a really interesting dilemma to have. I never want people to feel like they always need to buy more and buy new things, right? So that's something that I'm trying to navigate. That if you have something that serves your purpose, then you don't need more of that thing, right? Like that thing then is like, just like write what you need, and you don't always need, you know, so I'm trying not to fall into the trap of always needing new things, the seasonal things, and just doing really small, kind of like thoughtful offerings. And I think like the space itself is so beautiful, and it's really what's kind of keeping me entertained is trying to figure out how to maximize the space without it feeling cluttered,
mm-hmm.
And kind of rearranging space and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
I do love antique furniture, which is kind of problematic because I would love to source some like larger pieces, but the space is a limiting factor in that regard. But I also find that sometimes like when you have limits and you have structure, that actually makes your creativity kind of more, right? Instead
Absolutely.
Of having like a wide open
mm-hmm.
Canvas. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, people will find out by going into Hawthorne.
Yes.
And how'd you come up with the name Hawthorne?
Oh, well, that's a long story. I don't know if we have time for that. So Hawthorne is a plant. It's actually in my book, is one of the plants that I have featured, right? So the book that Our Kindred Home is seasonally laid out, and I kind of picked plants that I had familiarity with, that I used, and Hawthorne is a tree.
Is it in the apple family?
It is. It's in the rose family.
Rose and apple.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's a huge family.
It is a huge family, and it's a very powerful family, I think, in the connections that it has with humans, right? They have most of the rose family plants have the little five-petaled flower, and then those flowers turn into a type of fruit that humans can consume. So apple, rose, those are all plants. Hawthorn is another one. And the fruit of the hawthorn is a berry. And that's the first kind of plant that I had worked with was hawthorn berries. And I love to put them in apple cider, spiced cider in the fall. And hawthorn is a plant that is for heart opening, right? So it's a plant that really connects with the heart space. And so I had been wanting, so I make flower essences, and I had been wanting to find a hawthorn tree flowering, right? So they flower in May. Hawthorn is used usually in like May Day celebrations and festivals. And I had been on a hunt for hawthorn for like 5 years. I bought a hawthorn sapling and I planted it in our garden. And I was just looking for, I was asking around town at the farmer's market. I was asking farmers, do you have a hawthorn tree on your property? Could I come and like harvest the flower? And it just eluded me for years. And so we bought some property, and we, you know, spent, I don't know, 3 years kind of camping on this property, ended up building a house. And then last spring, I'm out on a little walk with my son, and he was like, "Mom, do you smell that? Something smells like death." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "It kind of smells, something smells really gross." So hawthorn is this beautiful little white flower on this tree, but it smells, it's kind of a plant of like the liminal space, right? It's like the plant of the other world. It's said that the fae kind of live around hawthorn trees. And I turn around, and in full bloom behind me, a place that I've walked by hundreds of times, there is an old hawthorn tree growing, and it just felt like such a gift. And a couple days later, my uncle ended up passing away, so I never really got the chance to make the flower essence. But I felt like it was even more than just the flower essence, right? It was like there for me in this time of grief, and it was just this, like, I don't know, it was just this gift. And I ended up showing somebody local the, like, a picture I took of the flower, and then they were telling me that the tree actually is a native hawthorn tree. So usually hawthorn trees that we come across are came from Europe, but this was a native variety. And so in the fall I collected seeds, and so to me hawthorn is just like this, like a heart space. And that's kind of what I want the shop to feel like, a mm-hmm. place that feels safe to people, that a place where you can come in and kind of just let your guard down. And yeah, that's kind of a heart-led everything I do there.
Isn't that sweet? Well, I know where hawthorns grow.
Oh, do you?
I do.
Well,
I was, the art fair, the Driftless Art Fair every year is in Soldiers Grove. And I admired these trees that were along the street, mm-hmm. where the by the park where the fair is. And you've probably been there. Have you been to the Driftless Art Fair?
No, I have not.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
Well, these trees look kind of like umbrellas. Mm-hmm. They're flat. They're the head part of the tree. What do you call that? These particular trees are more like umbrellas. They're not weeping.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more compact, and I saw that they had, fruits on them at one time. I just loved the shape of the tree,
mm-hmm.
and so Lisa Ashley, who's just a couple of doors down from you at Utopia,
yeah.
She also has a nursery and a greenhouse. She's the one who planted those trees.
Oh, amazing.
And so I had asked her, do you know what those trees are? And she said, yeah, they're hawthorns. In fact, she actually told me the actual variety and everything. But you'll love to see them. And I thought, well, I'd like to have one of those trees on my land. Now, they might not be the local ones.
Yeah.
They might be imported. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to find out from Lisa, but she knows. And I was so excited to hear about that. So I think that's really interesting. I didn't know that much about the fruit and so forth. Is the fruit kind of like a rose hip?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has little seeds in it.
Yep.
But they can be kind of, like mm-hmm. an inch. I mean,
yep.
they're not like apples, but they are. They're not tiny.
Yeah. There was one year I was just driving, whenever I would drive around in the countryside, if I saw a tree with like white blooms on it, I would pull over in my hunt for this, like, for this tree. I really wanted that mm-hmm. Flower essence. But
well, how do you make a flower essence? Is it distilled or what? How do you
A flower essence is when you collect the flowers of a plant. So kind of I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Bach. Rescue Remedy is a flower essence, and they, that was the one of the first people to kind of codify flower essences. But I always think that, humans have probably been making flower essences for millennia, our connections with flowers. Flower essence is the idea that a flower is the kind of ultimate expression of a plant, and that it carries its healing energy. And so a flower essence is you cut a flower and you put it in a bowl of water and you put it under the sun, And then that kind of imprints the water. The water is a carrier with that energetics of that flower. And you do that maybe for like 4 to 6 hours. And then you preserve it with an alcohol. Traditionally, it's brandy. But I like to use like organic vodka sometimes. And then you take droppers of that. And that's, it's said to work on the subtle energy body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, flower essences are very, like a very subtle medicine. It's not a tincture, but it's the energetics of the mm-hmm. flower kind mm-hmm. of imparted on water that can be used for spiritual, emotional, psychological healing.
And what kind of water do you use?
Spring water. Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't use distilled water.
You could use rainwater, couldn't you?
That would be
maybe,
natural.
I think.
Depends on what it's rolling off of.
Just clean,
right.
purified
okay.
water.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an amazing book. I really only quickly looked through it when I was in the store. It is available at the Food Co-op, so you can find it there or at the Hawthorne store here in town. But there's a lot of written material in there, photographs, and then many botanical drawings done by a friend of yours and ours.
Yeah.
By Franny Knapp. Franny Knapp, and they are just beautiful botanical illustrations that are just worth it to get the book just to have those. Beautiful. I mean,
so
she spent a couple of years, right, working mm-hmm. on these drawings. And then somebody else helped you do this book, someone local.
Yeah, Kirsten Lair. She helped me recipe test. So I created, I don't know, what is it? 60 to 80 recipes for the book, and Kirsten was my tester, so she would, you know, take a recipe home and make it with her family and tell me if I needed a little bit of salt or if, you know, if the recipe worked out. And so it was a really amazing experience to be able to work with her and kind of get her.
My goodness, this is a really locally produced book and something really to be proud of here in the Driftless. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Can you give us some ideas? Well, I'm going to take a station break, and then I'd like you to share a few of the recipes that you do have in your book, just to give us an idea of the range of what you did. But I'm talking with Allison Morgan. She has a little shop here, a very lovely home design store in Viroqua on Main Street. With beautiful utensils and fabrics and things like that for the home. And so you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen, and I guess Allison's in the kitchen today. Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT Community Radio, coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless area. And we are on every Saturday from noon to 1, and I talked with people about food-related things that can go very far afield. It has really been fun to do this show, and I've been doing it for 15 years now. And since the beginning of WDRT going on the air. And so if you like this show or would like to hear more shows that have been on Who's in the Kitchen, you can go to our website, WDRT.org, and look up Who's in the Kitchen. You can find past podcasts, and also the last Saturday of every month from noon to 1 is a farming show, which I began about a year ago, and I thought this area really needs to talk with the farmers here and talk about farming and how farming has changed over the years and to let people know where food comes from. I'm sure, you know, really, Allison and I are going to be friends. This is just fun to talk about, you know, the sources of food and how they get here. And anyway, I'm talking with Allison. We have about 15 minutes till the end of the show. And I asked her if she would share with us some of the recipes that she's developed. They're like your own recipes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just so cool. So I'm sure you say, well, they're not completely original because I was inspired by the cooking I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And right. And then you come up, this, you know, I think people might think they can't cook because they don't know how to just go in the kitchen and just mix stuff together. But like you say, you begin with recipes in a book. You begin with recipes and you learn proportions and mm-hmm. when you sift and when you add dry and wet and, you know, which kinds of fat you use. And the, after you cook for a while, then you start to be a little creative
mm-hmm.
and you learn a little bit more about herbs. And I learned, my favorite book was the McCall's cookbook, and they always used herbs, and that's how I learned about herbs really early in cooking. And that's always something that's subtle and you know, and healthful. So your principle, the principle for putting these particular recipes in your book, did you have a vision or a, you know, picture of what you wanted to have in the book?
Yeah, so I think it started for me, I really was thinking about what I would love to hand down to my kids and hand share with other people. Recipes, I think that you know, herbal recipes can sometimes get, I wanted like simple recipes to display herbs in a tasteful way. So a lot of the recipes in the book are inspired by my time in France, my mom's background. She's from Haiti. And so there are some recipes that are kind of staple recipes in, you know, Haitian kitchens. Things that I would make for my kids, but all kind of infused with herbs. So they're not traditional recipes that are herbal. They're just kind of like my own spin on things. And I think that, you know, for a lot of times you think of herbs as separate from food, but to me it's all plants, right? And so I wanted to think of fun and creative ways to employ herbs for like health and for nourishment, but also for fun. So a lot of like comfort kind of recipes as well, not just kind of health recipes.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like one of my favorite recipes in the book, you know, and it's like it's laid out seasonally, so spring,
okay.
summer,
mm-hmm.
fall, and winter.
Mm-hmm.
And those plants that you would harvest, right, the leaves in the spring, the fruit kind of in the summer and fall, roots in the fall and winter. So it's laid out in that way to kind
okay.
of help you, you know, figure out when you need to go out, maybe forage, keep your eyes open for things. It's a mix of plants that are kind of growing in nature and things that you could also just grow in your gardens. One of my favorite recipes is this is nettle pasta, where you're actually putting the nettle into the pasta. So it's not like a pesto. You're making your pasta itself green. And my kids love it. And I think it's just kind of this fun way to eat your greens, right?
So how do you make a pasta? Let's just go into that.
Pasta was, I found, to be really simple in a way, right? It's this recipe calls for 2 cups packed nettles, 1 large egg, and 1 cup of flour. And you just, you make a dough from that, and then you put it through your pasta.
You're showing with your hands, so I think you mix it with your hands,
yes,
right?
I did. I mixed
gooey.
It up, yeah, with my hands. And yeah, it's like one of the simplest and easy and just like nourishing and really kind of fun to do with your kids too.
Yes. Well, do you roll it out or do you just kind of pinch it off and drop it in?
So in this recipe, I roll it out, right? So you make a ball and then you refrigerate that and then I put it through my pasta maker,
mm-hmm.
Which I was a secondhand, you know, maker that I got from a friend. So you don't have to like invest in too much equipment really to, you know, make pasta. And
so after you make the pasta dough, mm-hmm. do you have to let it dry or anything before you put it in the boiling water?
You can dry it, but this one is I cook fresh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another one of my favorite recipes is, I'm trying to see if I can find it so I get the name right, but it's a Tulsi. I don't know if you're familiar with Tulsi or holy basil.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsi peach sorbet. It's
well.
So refreshing and delicious in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
My kid would eat the whole container if I let him.
Run us through how you make a sorbet. I made one, but I didn't stir it, and now it's just hard as a rock. So I know there's more to it than just...
Yeah, I'll have to look at the recipe. But I believe... it's been a while since I have made it. The trick is a tablespoon of vodka.
So it doesn't freeze solid. Okay. Yeah. A friend of mine did tell me that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you puree your fruit.
You make a kind of a simple syrup with honey. So this one is sweetened with honey and not sugar. Simple syrup with the holy basil, the honey, puree, ripe peaches, lemon juice, vanilla extract, and vodka. You puree it up, and then you put it in your ice cream maker.
Okay, so mm-hmm. stirring is part of making a sorbet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so have a little ice cream maker. Man, I picked one up at a resale shop.
I found mine at Goodwill for $2.99.
Yeah. We don't have to buy the $60 version.
No. Another one of my favorite summer recipes is elderflower cream in a strawberry tart.
Ooh.
So you infuse the pastry cream with elderflower.
The pastry cream. Oh, tell me how to make a pastry cream.
Well, this one is a little more, this takes a little more steps, but this one is inspired because I studied abroad in France, and I love tarte aux fraises, which is, strawberry tart, and would get one after school almost every day. And my friend's, my roommate's friend would come over, and he was like, I don't think I've ever seen you without a tarte in your mouth. And I think that was true. There are multiple pictures of me just kind of stuffing my face with strawberry tarts. So I wanted to kind of bring that into this.
So does it have a pie crust?
It is a pie crust.
Okay.
And then it has it's vanilla bean and elder flowers that you, so you heat the milk with the elder flowers and vanilla bean to kind of infuse the milk of the pastry cream with the elderflower flavor. It's so just like delicate and delicious. And then you strain it, and then you add your egg yolks and sugar. And then you heat it, and then you let it cool in the refrigerator, and then you have a cream. So it's egg yolk, mm-hmm. elderflower, vanilla, bean, and cream.
Infused with the
elderflowers.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Well, then you have one of those pie tins mm-hmm. that has the little bottom.
The fluted, yep.
The fluted.
The name is escaping me, but it has the bottom that kind of comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you carry those in your store?
No, but I should.
You better.
Yeah. Well, that's, the thing about the space issue, right, is what things do you need here in Viroqua, and do you have space on your shelves for it? Mm-hmm. So
the picture you show is the full 7 or 8 inch pan, but you mm-hmm. can you also get little
you could do mini ones too,
little tart mm-hmm. pans,
And then I have one of my other favorite recipes is a piece, which is a kind of a condiment in Haitian cooking. And this kind of would sit out, and my, grandma would add it to soups. It was kind of a base for a lot of recipes and things. It was kind of put on top of things for extra flavor. And when I was writing the book, I was really thinking about how this recipe to me just kind of epitomizes the fact that food is medicine, right? And a lot of traditional and indigenous cooking already has that principle in it, right? That like the food that you're eating has herbs and it has, you know, plants that are going to help with your health. And so this recipe is a kind of like a sauce that you kind of scoop out of a jar. Parsley, bell peppers, onions, thyme, scallions, garlic, cloves, celery stalk, bouillon cube, scotch bonnet, and apple cider vinegar. And it makes this kind of this green sauce, and you can use it, and it kind of can stay in the refrigerator, but you can mix it into your eggs, you can mix it into your soup, and it just has so much flavor.
Oh, gosh, yes. It's kind of like a pesto.
Kind of like a pesto, yeah, in a way.
The ingredients, mm-hmm. they're very different from what you mm-hmm. might expect. Oh, my gosh. I have just so much enjoyed talking with you today, Allison. Thank you so much for sharing. You just have an abundance of experiences and background to share, and it's really been fun having you on Who's in the Kitchen, so thanks.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, thank you for being on our show. So you've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. And you can listen to this show and many other shows for past many years on WDRT by going to our archives. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.